I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 11th of August. And I have been gone for a while. Maybe some of you didn't know that because my voice was on repeat for the last couple weeks, but I must ask for your forgiveness at the top of the show if I have missed some political news, as I was in northern Minnesota with the loons and northern Wisconsin with quite a few bald eagles, and then at a significant high school reunion in Illinois with classmates from the 1960s. So it's been a time. Please help me fill in the blanks. We weren't here for a live All Things Political yesterday, so we thought we would do it today because so much has happened. I did watch the Republican debate last Thursday, the early one in the afternoon and the later one as well, and there's a lot of news that reverberates from that, so we'll probably start with that particular issue during our Tuesday All Things Political. Our guest is at the Iowa State Fair, which is so appropriate. Francesca Chambers is with us. She's White House correspondent for the dailymail.com. She's covering the 2016 presidential race. She is former editor of Red Alert Politics, an online publication written by and for young conservatives. She has contributed to the Washington Examiner as a regular guest on PBS's To the Contrary and the conservative radio program, The Michael Coolidge Show. She covers politics, Congress, the White House, the Obama administration, campaigns, and elections. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for her during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org, and our Facebook page, I can remember all of this, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Let's talk politics, obviously, because it's hot and heavy. Long before the election, it is hot and heavy. Francesca, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always great.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So are all the candidates at the Iowa State Fair?
Well, most of the candidates will be at the fair when it begins this week on Thursday. It actually hasn't quite started yet. I got here a little bit early so that I could get all settled in before all the craziness started to happen. But most of them will be here. You know, the big names will all be here over the weekend. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. You can find them all at the State Fair if some of your listeners would like to drive over from Wisconsin. It's not very far.
Well, our State Fair is going on, too, so I don't know how you can do both.
Well, there can never be too much fair. You can go to one and then you can go to the other.
I'm sure that's true. There can never be too much state fair. Well, you mentioned Donald Trump, so I'm amazed how I'm going to have to talk about Donald Trump for probably quite some period of time. Donald Trump, the polls, New York Times is reporting today that he's still number one with 16% of caucus goers in Iowa, although there is some concern about whether or not he's presidential enough as a result of last Thursday's debate.
Well, as a result of last Thursday's debate, you might wonder that, given some of the coverage you might have seen, particularly of his fight with Megyn Kelly. But you know, NBC has already taken a poll from that debate, and its results may surprise you. They found that Trump support had not gone down at all, even after that debate. It would seem that the people who were with him were still with him after that. Before that debate, he was at 22%. Now he is at 23%. He actually had a 1% change, and that could be, you know, explained away, you know, just by a little flip in the polls. But however, you know, he is at roughly the same percentage point as when he went in.
And when you talk about those people who are with them, Francesca, give me a better idea of who are the people who are with him.
Well, you know, this is looking at just conservatives, might I add. This is not looking at the entirety of the spectrum. When you start looking at the entirety of the spectrum, you know, if he went up against Hillary Clinton, he would not win. But among Republican voters, he's doing very well. And those are primarily the folks that are probably most familiar with him from The Apprentice, from seeing him on reality television. A lot of the folks who are supporting him are not necessarily the ones that went to college and had a four-year education. They are primarily the people that, you know, did not go to college. And that's where he's gaining a lot of support, but also heavily from conservatives. A lot of conservatives are liking what he's saying. They like that he's a political outsider, that he's not been in Washington all these years. You know, you have to look at who else is doing really well in this poll. Ben Carson, no political experience either, and yet he jumped up to 11% in the most recent poll. That puts him in third place in the race, and he doesn't have any formal political experience. Fourth place, Carly Fiorina.
Right.
Carly Fiorina is in fourth place, and she also does not have traditional political experience. Now, she ran for office before, but she didn't win. And so I think that really tells you something about what these Republican voters are looking for in a candidate this time.
Yeah. I thought the debate, and I did see both of them last Thursday night, I thought that they were very good. I thought the questioners on Fox were excellent.
I'm a big fan of Megyn Kelly. I'm going to be honest about that. I think she, you know, she's a wonderful journalist, and I think that of all the questioners who were on from Fox the other night, you know, I think that Trump, obviously, for anyone who's been paying attention to the back and forth that's been going on between them in the last few days, was very angry because he felt that she singled him out.
Yes.
And asked him tougher questions than she asked other people. But, you know, that's not to say that other people on stage didn't get tough questions about things that they've said in the past. And, you know, if you look at another high-profile event that came out of that was the back and forth between Chris Christie and Rand Paul over 9/11 and Hurricane Sandy. And, you know, so that, you know, there was a lot of other stuff going on there where other people got called out on things that they had said or done in the past.
Mm-hmm. I think that you reported on this in one of your pieces that although Trump claims he was talking about her nose, it was fairly obvious to most people what he was talking about. He fired his longtime friend and key advisor, Roger Stone. Stone saying that Trump is losing his grip on reality. He has these yes men around him, and now he's living in a parallel world. Do you think those are insightful statements from his former top guy?
Well, that's an interesting situation going on there, because his former top guy, Roger Stone, says that he wasn't fired. He says that he quit before Trump fired him because he had a problem with the way that Trump had treated Megyn Kelly, the way that he was going after her so hard in the media. So, you know, it's really impossible to know who's telling the truth here, whether, you know, Roger Stone did quit before or if he was fired. But I do believe it's very clear that they had a disagreement over the direction of the campaign and the way that the campaign was going.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, if you look at the polls, it's hard to tell who's right. Because on one hand, you have Trump doing so well in this Republican primary, winning a quarter of voters. No one else is anywhere close to him. You know, Ted Cruz is in second place in this latest poll, and he's only at 13%, a full 10 points behind Donald Trump. So on one hand, you could say that Donald Trump has been very successful. But then again, you have to look at the general election makeup, and if he were to take on Hillary Clinton, and he just couldn't possibly win because so many people think that he's untrustworthy, they don't like him. And it would be very tough at this point, I think, to change voters' opinion of him, given how high-profile the statements he's made.
Right.
I think that would have made them not like him have been.
So, Francesca, what are the Republicans going to do about him?
Well, I think that some of them have responded, and increasingly so, by attacking him, by saying, you know, this isn't the type of person that we want representing our party. You know, Jeb Bush, he is a perfectly good example, because over the weekend at the Red State gathering, it's a gathering for conservative activists that I was there covering on behalf of the Daily Mail over the weekend. If you recall, that's the big gathering that Donald Trump was disinvited to.
Yeah.
After his comments about Megyn Kelly, and that made a whole stink at the conference, and every presidential candidate who was there ended up having to comment on it. And Jeb Bush, you know, got up on stage and was asked about it, and he said, Donald Trump should apologize. He's wrong. You know, does our party really want to lose 53% of the population because he's attacking women? And so Jeb Bush, you know, unapologetic in his stance on Donald Trump at this point. And I think you're seeing, you know, more and more of the candidates coming out and putting a ton of distance between the Republican Party and Donald Trump's comments to try and perhaps bring some of their voters, so to speak, to their senses and say, you know, again, given that Democrats have charged Republicans with a quote-unquote war on women, is this really the type of person we want representing our party in November?
All right. Maureen Dowd had an interesting column yesterday in which she said, and I wonder what your response is to this, Donald Trump's policy ideas are ripped from the gut instead of the head. Still, he can be a catalyst, challenging his rivals where they need to be challenged and smoking them out. Sometimes, she goes on to say, you need a showman in the show.
Well, I think there's no doubt, as Donald Trump has said himself, that he's not very concerned about being politically correct. That is not what his concern is. He's not concerned in going over it in his head over and over again and discussing with it with all the senior advisors that he has, you know, over and over again. He's going to tell it exactly like it is and exactly the way he thinks, you know, it comes to him and the way he thinks that it needs to be said to make the most impact. But at the same time, you know, he's obviously using his brain to come up with those. He's said time and time again that where he's gotten his impressions of what's going on at the border is from Border Patrol officials. He's talked to a lot of them. You know, he went down to the border recently. So certainly he, even if the way that he's stating them are rubbing some people the wrong way, it's not that he's making these things up. You know, he's just throwing them out there. You know, he is, as he stated, dating them, facing them in facts, at least the facts as, you know, he perceives them.
Right. Well, speaking of brains, let's talk about Ben Carson for a while, who really does have this very sweet demeanor and must be one heck of a smart guy. His comments, you know, you just didn't expect them in this presidential debate. I'm the only one to separate Siamese twins. When he said that, I thought, oh my gosh, I guess you are. I don't know anybody who's done that. The only one to operate on babies while they're still in their mother's womb. The only one to take out half of a brain, although you would think if you go to Washington that someone had beat me to it. That's quite a statement. You had to take notice of those comments, right?
Well, you know, it's like I was saying just a few minutes ago that, you know, people really love him because he isn't your typical politician
right. That's
from Washington. What they love about him is that he understands politics. He's from Maryland. He's from Baltimore, which, you know, for your listeners, is just about 45 minutes outside of D.C. So he's not super far outside of the beltway, so to speak. However, you know, he is not a D.C. insider either. You know, he hasn't built his entire career on Capitol Hill. You know, he isn't gearing up for this so that he can have some sort of, you know, big payout as a lobbyist or sitting on boards or corporations or get a radio show afterwards. You know, that's not what this is about for him. And I think people can see that he's very genuine in everything that he says, and he's just so likable. He has very high favorables because when he says stuff like he did at the debate, you know, everyone just has to smile. He's a very heartwarming person.
Yes, he is. That's a good description for him. Very heartwarming. When you talk about outsiders, let's look at the Democrats for a moment, because the other person who's really getting huge crowds is Bernie Sanders. What's that all about?
Bernie Sanders. I mean, I think that people love about Bernie Sanders is it's not that he dug up his, you know, opened up a chest, got out his dusty progressive credentials, shook him off, you know, put him on so that he could run for president. That's not Bernie Sanders. He's not one of those politicians who's, you know, literally pulling again out their progressive credentials or their progressive card or even conservative card, you know, when it's time to run for office and touting, you know, touting a record or touting certain positions that he thinks will be popular with the voters that he needs to win elected office. This is what he's been doing his entire life. He has had the same point of view his entire life, even when it wasn't as popular as it is now, and he could literally barely get elected mayor, you know, in a small town. And so I truly feel that what people really like about him is that they know where he stands on the issues. And they may not always agree with him on the issues, but unlike some of those other candidates out there, they know exactly where he stands and that he is being genuine when he says that he's going to do, you know, what he's going to do.
Scott Walker, let's talk about him for a while. Didn't really appear front and center during the debate. Do you have a sense, you've arrived in Iowa now, do you have a sense at all that he's losing some support in the state that he was supposed to win by several percentage points or not?
Well, as I mentioned before, the fair doesn't start till Thursday, so I haven't had a chance yet since I got here to start really getting a better sense of how the debate played in Iowa. Because the debate, you know, was Thursday night, and most folks were in Cleveland and then Georgia for the conservative conference. So we're all just getting, you know, back to Iowa to sort of see how this is going to play out here at some of these rallies and crowds. But what I will say is that he did not stand out in that debate at all. You know, he just kind of got lost on stage. And I understand that maybe he didn't want to engage in some of the attacks on Trump or get in some of these fights that the other candidates on stage did. But at the same time, you know, he kind of just disappeared into the large stage of 10 people that were up there. And again, I think that also shows in his post-debate numbers. He was at 10% going into the debate, and now he's at 7%. He dropped 3 points. So did Jeb Bush, by the way. Both of them dropped 3 points coming out of it. And again, it's not a huge loss, but they went from double-digit support to single-digit support following that debate, as some of the other folks that we just talked about, who did much better in the debate, shot up through the ranks. And so I absolutely think that between now and the next debate, which is going to be in California in a little bit more than a month, I think that, you know, he's really going to have to, you know, hit the pavement, hit the events in the early states, and then come into that next debate, you know, with a much stronger showing.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We have many of them coming in already. We're doing just a day late, all things political. I hope that's okay with you because I'm back from vacation. Francesca Chambers is our guest, just arrived at the Iowa State Fair. Well, it doesn't start until Thursday, but she is in Iowa, and she is very closely covering the 2016 presidential race, particularly the Republican side of that race. She's White House correspondent for DailyMail.com and former editor of Red Alert Politics, an online publication written by and for young conservatives. She covers politics and the White House, the Obama administration, conservative politics, campaigns, and elections. We haven't had a chance to talk about the debate, and certainly Donald Trump is dominating the news coverage with his comments about Megyn Kelly. What do the Republicans do about Donald Trump? And if he does go, because he hasn't said he's not going to do this, if he does go to a third party, what will that do to the Republicans? How can the Republicans ease him out, or do they want him in? What about you? Do you want him in? Does he get people to talk about things that maybe they should talk about but they don't want to talk about, and he forces certain issues? Or do you find him to be just kind of a blowhard and no place in presidential politics? Well, that's just some of what we're talking about. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. We have a Facebook page where we love to read your messages. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Francesca Chambers is with us now. She is White House correspondent for the DailyMail.com, and she is covering this already fascinating presidential race. And we're taking phone calls, starting with Claire in Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen. Welcome back.
Thanks, Claire.
I have a theory, and I'm interested to hear your guest's reaction to this. Maybe people are turning anti-establishment.
Are you there, Claire? Oh, the phone line just dropped. Well, let's take that sentence, though. People are turning anti-establishment, Francesca.
I think if you look back to the Tea Party, in 2010 and the popularity of it, I think that's only continuing to rise. You know, they're very unhappy with their representatives in Washington, whether they're Republican or they're Democrat. You know, and that's another reason why I think that Sanders is so popular. He's been in Washington for a long time, but he's absolutely not the establishment. He only became a Democrat in order to run for the Democratic nomination. Before that, he was an independent, and seriously independent at that, I might add. And so I do think that, if you look at both sides, there is a common thread here, and that it's that voters are do not want necessarily the establishment candidate. They're looking at other options. But at the same time, there's obviously a lot of folks who want someone who has a lot of experience and a resume that on paper, looks very good and says that person could be commander in chief. And that's why I think that Hillary Clinton is getting so much support as well. Despite Bernie Sanders' popularity, in Iowa, she's still beating him by double digits points. He still hasn't even gotten anywhere closer.
Yes, right. So what is it about, what is the establishment, and why have people had it with the establishment?
Well, I think that a lot of folks outside of Washington view the establishment as the type of lawmakers who, do shift their political leanings a little bit when it comes down to, because they think their political career, because they want in Washington forever. They are concerned about, you know, getting that job after they do get out of lawmaking, a big payout potentially on, you know, as a lobbyist on what they call K Street in Washington. And that's not necessarily true all the time, but there are a lot of lawmakers who do go on to be lobbyists and work in lobby shops.
Right.
So I do think that, you know, Americans are unhappy with Congress as they see that sort of activity going on while they're struggling to pay the bills.
Thanks, Claire, for your call, which at least we got the gist of it. I'm sorry you fell off, but that'll happen. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I want to agree with the last caller. I'm left of left, and I am definitely sick of the establishment, so that's why Bernie Sanders really appeals to me. But I want to talk about what Donald Trump has said that's been absolutely true. His critiques of Scott Walker have been overshadowed by the other statements he's made, and nobody has really looked into the comments he's made about Walker, and they are so true. Scott Walker always brings up he was an Eagle Scout. You know why he constantly brings that up? Because he's never had a real job in the real world. He has only worked for government his whole life. He has no credentials, and he is an intellectual lightweight, and the more debates we're going to see him in, the lower he'll go in the polls.
Francesca, what do you think?
Well, Scott Walker did have a job that was outside of government when he first got out of school. He did not finish college. I think a lot of people know about that because he went to take a job with the Red Cross instead of finishing school. And then he did get into politics very young in Wisconsin. That's true. And I wouldn't call him an old guy right now. He's still pretty, you know, he's still pretty young guy right now and has a lot more time left in his future, potentially to even run again after this time. And as far as, you know, what Scott Walker doesn't know about the issues, you know, it is still very difficult to say, and it's very early in the race about, you know, who's strong on what issue and this, that, and the other, because there's so many candidates who are running. I tell you, when I'm at places like this, like the fair, I mean, we're just running around all the time trying to catch them, you know, it's like the Pokemon, you gotta catch them all, because there are 20-some candidates running, 20-plus candidates when you put the Republicans and the Democrats together these days. And so it is really hard if you're, you know, someone like me who does want to treat everyone fairly and wants to, you know, really interview everybody and press them all on the issues. But realistically, you know, there is only so much time in the day to go after all of them. And so I think myself and other journalists do try to do our best, though, to keep all of them accountable.
You just need to plan it so that you're following the politicians who are eating what you want to snack on at the Iowa State Fair, right?
You should see my calendar. You should see my calendar. I have them all mapped out and color-coded, and it's just, you know, it's just colors everywhere for while they're in Iowa at the State Fair. They're just doing so much.
I imagine. What about Joe Biden? Do you think, evidently he's considering a run and will decide by the end of the summer, do you think that he will run? The polls are showing and commentators are saying that he really doesn't stand a chance in terms of money or in terms of being able to be competitive with Hillary Clinton.
Sorry, what was the last part?
That he doesn't really stand a chance. Does he stand a chance, and do you think that he will jump in the race?
Oh, the vice president, you know, I think that there is obviously within the Democrat Party some yearning for someone besides Hillary Clinton, because when you have someone like Sanders getting so much support, it really does show that they want to see a competition, that they don't want a coronation, that Democrats do want a nomination. And so I do think that you could see Joe Biden, if he does jump into the race, you know, get a lot of support. It remains to be seen how much, because it's been a while since he's been out there campaigning, a few years. He hasn't really been out that much lately. You know, he had that family tragedy, so he spent, you know, a couple months just hanging out with his family and not doing a lot of public events. And so, you know, it shows in the polls, though, however, that despite that he's not been doing anything at all, up until recently he had about as much of support as Sanders. And if Sanders can jump this much, why couldn't Joe Biden?
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655. And we have lines open now if you'd like to join us. Ray, thanks for the call. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Well, I hope you saved your November 23rd, 1963 Chicago Sun-Times for me, Kathleen. One constant theme, quality that all of the Republicans exhibited, either at the cocktail hour debate or the main debate, was absolute, total hatred of organized labor. And this has been a continual war against organized labor from the vast majority of Republicans since the time of Richard Nixon. And we are sick of it. We're sick of it here in Wisconsin. I hope your guest takes a read at the wonderful article that Jason Stein wrote on Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about how we were abandoned by Mr. Obama in 2011 and 2012 during Act 10 and the recall campaign. And if Mr. Obama would have made one appearance here, he would have swayed the tide. Walker would not be running for president today, and we'd have Mayor Tom Barrett as our governor.
Francesca.
I haven't seen the specific article that he's, you know, referring to, but I will absolutely take a look at that. And follow me on Twitter, and I'll get him a response there.
Okay. Do you think that there is, let's just broaden this a bit. The Republican strategy for reaching, I don't know what to call it, the working class vote, what are the issues that will appeal to the people who maybe used to be strong union people, the people who are, you know, working hard, not making a whole lot of money, working hard?
Well, as far as, you know, the people who are strong union people, Scott Walker's not going to be your guy.
No.
I think that's evidently obvious. I mean, most of what he's running on is the union busting and what he did in Wisconsin. So if, you know, unions are your thing, you know, Scott Walker's definitely not your candidate. But at the same time, you know, Walker and a lot of the other candidates have also made their campaigns about reaching out to the middle class. You know, I was just listening to Mike Huckabee, for instance, the other day, and I was listening to him talk about how the system and the way that it's set up in the economy lately has only been benefiting those at the top, and it's not been benefiting enough people in the middle class and in the middle. I think that Republicans and Democrats, you know, everyone on both sides really realizes right now that Americans are hurting, and even though the economy has started to come back significantly over the last several years, you know, Americans quite haven't entirely felt that in their pocketbook yet. You know, maybe they have jobs, but it's not good enough to just have a job. I think that a lot of the candidates out there realize that Americans want to be, you know, successful, and they want to be able to do a little bit more than just put food on their table and just put clothes, you know, on their kids' back. And so I think you're going to be hearing from a lot of, like, all of the candidates across the spectrum, a lot about what they're going to be doing for the middle class as this campaign progresses.
Thanks, John, very much for your call. Jim in Burlington, hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I have a question about your guest's feelings about Scott Walker and some of the things that maybe haven't come up on the national campaign that folks in Wisconsin are more aware of. He's talked about the fact that he's been elected three times in a row. He, you know, shut down the unions, et cetera. But, you know, job growth has been anemic in the state compared to the rest of the Midwest. We've had the issue of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, the scandal there with respect to and the John Doe investigations. Even if he wasn't implicated, it makes me wonder about the folks that Scott Walker works with.
Francesca.
You know, I would definitely say that Scott Walker is going to have some problems, you know, coming into the presidential election and into the GOP nomination because of the fights that he is, you know, having at home on the education and on the budget and another one that I've heard quite frequently when I'm on the trail and I'm talking to independents, you know, and Democrats is the work that, you know, he's done on abortion and the 20-week abortion ban. I do think that he absolutely is going to have a difficulty, I think, appealing to some of those independents and Democrats if he does become the Republican nominee, and that, you know, he's going to have to find a way to build a bridge with all those folks. He really does need to win the GOP nomination first, which is why he's pressing a lot of the issues that I think some of the callers have brought up, those, you know, but if he wants to win the entire nomination and, you know, be a rather the general and the presumptive nominee, Hillary Clinton, you know, he's got to find a way to bridge the gap with all these callers.
Now, I did watch the first debate as well. I'm sure you did too, Francesca, while I was up in watching the Bald Eagles in northern Wisconsin. But I must say, and the commentators would, to a person, say the same thing, that the person who seemed to be most impressive was Carly Fiorina, and she's been impressive in subsequent media interviews. Can you tell me, was this a surprise? Can you give me a little bit more of her background and whether or not she might gain some steam here?
Well, I think the key things about Carly Fiorina is that she is the former executive of Hewlett-Packard in California. She then went on to run for the California Senate, losing to Barbara Boxer. Then she, you know, moved back to Virginia because that's where all of her family is, by the way. And now she is the chairman of the American Conservative Union Foundation, which works with the American Conservative Union to put on CPAC, which is the largest conservative political conference every single year. She, you know, also does consulting on the side, and she, you know, before she launched her campaign, had a political action committee that helped get women elected to office. Carly Fiorina's performance I was not surprised by. As a political observer who, again, covers the race and pays a lot of attention and stuff, I actually long said I thought she was better off in the smaller debate the first time around because it allowed her to do exactly what she did, which was steal the show, be the star. Mm-hmm. And if she had been in the main debate, she wouldn't have been able to do that, I don't think. You know, only Donald Trump was ever going to be the star of that main debate. And I think that by not having to be on the stage with him at the same time, that gave her an opportunity to talk about herself, to talk about her policies, and to really shine as she stood on stage, you know, by six other candidates who obviously aren't top-tier candidates either.
Yeah, interesting. That's interesting. Thank you, Jim. Michael in Middleton, hi.
Oh, hi. Hey, I'm enjoying the show. And I would echo, you know, the sentiments of the previous couple callers talking about Scott Walker, and I would just add that here's a guy who claimed that he's about job creation, cuts $250 million out of the UW budget, and at the same time gives $250 million to undertaxed hedge fund billionaires to build a new stadium. And the bigger point is, you know, Scott Walker needs to win Iowa, but can't Iowa it just be bought? I mean, 4 years ago we had Michelle Bachmann, you know, proudly proclaiming that she grew up in the same town as John Wayne Gacy, the mass murderer. I think she just bought it. You know, Scott Walker's got Koch Brothers money behind him, $100 million. Can't they just buy it?
TV ads? TV ads, that kind of thing, Michael?
Well, no, I think it's like if you buy enough tickets to the event. I mean, I think that's how Bachmann won. There's not that many votes cast. It's like, I don't know.
Can I clarify about the event?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, so the event that the caller is talking about is actually the straw poll, which was discontinued.
Oh, okay. It was.
The straw poll, yeah, was discontinued. It used to be in Ames, Iowa, and it was supposed to be this summer, but they ended up canceling it recently. And I think part of the reason was because candidates were spending so much money to come in and try and, as he was saying, buy it, to bust in their supporters to try and create momentum for themselves ahead of time. And so they canceled that event entirely. So now it doesn't exist at all. And so what everyone is competing for right now is to win the Iowa caucus, which is actually the way that the election is, the nomination process is determined. Delegates are apportioned based on the caucus process. Other states obviously have primaries where voters go directly to the polls, and that's how the nomination will be determined.
Mm-hmm. And that caucus, we took our show to Dubuque, Iowa back in 2008 and had a chance to go to one of the caucuses, and they were absolutely fascinating. I don't know too many other places that do this, and I wasn't familiar with how the give and take and trying to get support from people, and it's like you're building all these budding potential politicians in those caucuses because people know what they're talking about, either that or they're darn persuasive.
Yeah, the caucus system, I think, is lovely because you do really get to see why people are voting the way that they're voting.
Yes.
Versus, you know, the ballot process is completely private if you're just casting a ballot in a primary process. But at the caucuses, everyone has to, you know, kind of declare their support and make it
right.
Very clear.
Yeah.
And get speeches on why they're supporting people.
I know.
So if you're a political junkie like me, absolutely, I find it incredibly fascinating. And it does help me to get a better sense of why the eventual winner of those caucuses is the winner.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Michael, for your call. Nate in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I was going to ask, because I actually did watch the debate, and it struck me that barely any of the discussion touched on global warming beyond opportunity to criticize Obama, which makes me wonder if anybody on the conservative side of the aisle is willing to actually take it as a serious issue. And I think it should be.
Francesca.
Well, I think it also goes back to what I was saying earlier in the interview about how there's, you know, you got 10 people on stage, 10 people on the big stage and the primetime event, and you had 7 people on the minor stage, and you only have so much time in order to get quick questions in. And not only beyond that, for anyone who watched it, you know that beyond when they were asking questions, candidates were kind of just rolling with it and attacking each other. And there were a couple of times it got a little bit out of control, and the moderators had to put their foot down and jump in. So I think that, you know, in the first debate, what you saw is you saw the tackling of the things that have been front and center in this, you know, in this race. And you're right, they're not always the substantive issues. Not everything that's going on with Donald Trump is necessarily a substantive issue, but it is what has been front and center. And they will be debating so many more times in the course of this campaign. We've already got, you know, a couple more lined up before the end of this year, before they even, you know, the polls even open. And so I do hope that, like the caller said, that there will be a chance to talk about more substantive issues as we go along.
And thank you, Nate, very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls. We're doing a Tuesday version of All Things Political today because I've been on vacation, and we wanted to certainly follow up on last week's debate, and we're into the presidential election big time now, so it seemed appropriate to just do an All Things Political this hour. Francesca Chambers is our guest this hour. She is the political reporter and White House correspondent at the Daily Mail. Her areas of expertise: Congress, politics, the White House, the Obama administration, conservative politics, campaigns, and elections. She is currently in Iowa, where she will be following the many, many candidates around the Iowa State Fair, which starts on Thursday. But our state fair, the best state fair, don't miss it. Don't even be late. Isn't that how it goes? Yeah. Start is in full swing now. So let's take more phone calls. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Lines are open. What did you make of the debate? What do you make of Donald Trump? Does it behoove the Republicans to try to get him away from television screens for the rest of the campaign here, or is it good as a voter to have him front and center? Do you think Joe Biden should enter the race? Are we in an anti-establishment kind of mood, thus the attraction to Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders? What do you think? Our email is talk@wpr.org. We always like to read your messages on Facebook, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for our guest, and Andrew in Green Bay is next. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if you think that the candidates that are not career politicians such as Trump and Fiorina are at a disadvantage because they're not familiar with the standards and the political jargon that entails the position.
Well, you know, I think that, the two that you mentioned are doing really well, but you also have to look at Ben Carson, too. You know, Ben Carson, if you paid attention to the debate, he wasn't as quick on his feet as some of the other candidates were that were up there on that stage. You know, he didn't trade jabs as well as Chris Christie or Rand Paul, yet he got some of the best applause. As he, you know, again pointed out, you know, how silly what was going on was on stage, and, you know, and made quips of his own. And so, you know, I think it's hard to argue in an election cycle like this one, again, when you look at what's happening with Trump and Fiorina and Sanders, that they're at a disadvantage. In fact, it's possible that the folks who have the best resumes and have the most experience are at slightly a little bit of a disadvantage this time because they are seen as Washington insiders, and that's not necessarily what voters want.
Francesca, let me ask you this, and I know it's real early and we're going to be talking about this for a long time, but it wasn't that long ago, when you consider the money that the Democrats have, the money the Republicans have, that the odds-on favorite. In fact, they were to be the candidates, Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, that was it. Everybody else might become involved, but they are going to be, it's a foregone conclusion. Is it still, do you think, a foregone conclusion or not, on both sides?
Well, when you look at Hillary Clinton, just taking her alone, I look at her unfavorables, and I look at how many people say that they don't trust her, and they don't like her, and they don't think that she cares about people like them. And it's very high. You know, it's something like 57% in that range, almost 6 out of 10 people. Yet at the same time, they recognize that she does have the experience. You know, she does have the most experience on paper. And when they take a look at that, I think that what's going through a lot of voters' minds is that, you know, it's not like they know any of these other people either. They, you know, for all they know, that all these other politicians who they just met or haven't even met at all, they could also be untrustworthy. They could also, you know, potentially be liars. You know, I think that's what's going through the mind of an average voter. And so, you know, I don't necessarily know that all the things that have been going on with Hillary Clinton's emails and all the attacks that Republicans have put on her are going to make that much of a difference in the end. Because if that many people have said, you know, all along through the polling in the last couple of months, that she's not their favorite person in the world, but yet she's still handily beating, you know, all of the other Democrats who are running against her. You know, what would it take for Democrats to not pick her, as the nominee? And I don't know that there's going to be that much that would change between now and when voting starts that would change that perception.
Mm-hmm. And what about Jeb Bush?
You know, Jeb Bush hasn't performed as well, I would say, as I think a lot of people thought that he would, given that he had such a head start in terms of fundraising. I remember it being Christmas time, and I had to end up working over Christmas break because he announced that he was forming his exploratory committee, and he was, you know, disassociating himself with all these businesses. That's Christmas time last year. You know, we had just finished an election. And so I think that, you know, so many people thought that he was just going to run away with it because he had so much time. And he has raised an incredible amount of money. But, you know, the thing about all the money in the world is, you know, you can buy only so many ads with that, and you can only, persuade so many people. He still does have to get out there and have the right policies and have the right personality and be able to convince people. And that being said, you did mention it's early, and I would 100% agree with that. It is early, and I do think the one thing that his war chest will help him with is, well, these other candidates who might get somewhere near him in the primary start to sputter out because they don't have enough money to be able to, yes, you know, buy ads and pay staff. He's going to have tons of money left over, and I think that's really going to help him as we start to get into times like Super Tuesday, when you literally have to buy ads in 10 states on one day.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Andrew. Josie in Sheboygan Falls. Hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I thought, first of all, I think that the Mr. Blowhard is what he is. He is the epitome of what's wrong with capitalism. And the one that was the politician that showed any empathy towards real people was John Kasich, which I really didn't care that much about before. But he sounded very proud of what he did in his state, and I think that was very commendable. And also, I love Bernie Sanders, and that's who I would vote for, because like she said, and I know that he has said the same thing all along his whole career. He's not a phony like Mr. Walker. And I think, are they going to press Walker on all the things? You know, his close associates have been, they were put in jail or something, or at least convicted. I mean, don't they check into that? And then also him leaving school the way he did, and there was some kind of controversy there. I mean, there's so much. I just wonder if they're really good. They hardly asked him anything. I had to listen to it on the radio.
Uh-huh. Francesca, how carefully go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, as far as, you know, any sort of investigations go, you know, that's up to the folks in Wisconsin. And, you know, we have to say, you know, it's hard as a journalist, you know, the same thing here in Washington, D.C., you know, where I'm at normally, you know, the same thing is said of all the politicians there. And that's, you know, that's up to DOJ, that's up to a lot of other entities. You know, all that we can do is report on what's actually happening, you know, whether there is or isn't, an investigation into certain things. As far as Walker's, college record and everything goes, you know, he said he said that he left school because he got a job offer with the, you know, Red Cross and thought that it was better to go get his start working rather than to stay in school. You know, and that's the way that he's addressed that. But I, you know, it's certainly, you know, some folks might have a problem, obviously, with him not have finished college. But at the same time, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who think that it's great, particularly in Iowa, that, you know, that he, instead of spending all kinds of money on an education and going into college debt that he thought that he didn't need, you know, he was able to get a good paying job in the world and obviously have a very successful career.
Thanks, Josie, very much for the call. Here's a comment that came in on Facebook from Jessica. It was repulsive, she wrote, to see 10 men disregard women's health issues. To be willing to allow women to die for political gain is repugnant.
In the debate, I
guess in the debate, about, she must be making reference to the debate.
I think it's making reference specifically to the whole battle that's going on in Washington over defunding Planned Parenthood, which is really spilled into the presidential race. And you had, you know, candidates over the last week or two saying, you know, well, I defunded Planned Parenthood in my state, you know, just competing to out defund Planned Parenthood in some instances. And, you know, I will take a second to note that the federal legislation in Washington does, it would defund Planned Parenthood, but it doesn't get rid of the money that would actually go to health services for women. What Republicans who are pushing for this legislation in Washington want to do is they want to shift that money over to other organizations that provide health services to women. So I think in their mind, what they're trying to do is take the money away from Planned Parenthood because of all of the videos that we're now very familiar with. That have been coming out and shift it to other organizations that they feel are more worthy in terms of getting that money for help. But I will also point out that legislation hasn't moved anywhere in the Senate, and then Congress is actually in recess now until the middle of September. So, you know, it remains to be seen whether or not that legislation even ends up going anywhere after lawmakers get back from their 6 week recess.
Mm-hmm. And what about this? Does this resonate with people, this defunding of Planned Parenthood? Because, you know, evidently Planned Parenthood has vehemently denied that they're selling organs for profit. And there is certainly some of this is being used for medical research, which many in the medical profession saying that the tissue from aborted fetuses can be very important in developing vaccines and other things. So is it the video that showed somebody in a terrible fashion being cavalier about this, or is it that they provide some number of abortions? Or I don't quite understand the target, Planned Parenthood being such a target.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of folks are getting caught up in whether it was legal or not, but for conservatives, particularly, you know, progressives are saying, you know, what they're doing is legal, and, you know, if they weren't profiting from the sale of the fetal tissue and the organs, if they were, you know, following the law as, you know, they said that they were, that nothing they did was wrong. But it depends on what the definition of wrong is. And for conservatives, wrong is a moral wrong, not a legal wrong. And what conservatives are very upset about is that the tissue from the aborted fetuses is being, you know, sold at all, that the fetuses are being aborted in such a way that the tissues can be preserved. You know, for them, I think it's just shining a spotlight on what most people may not have was even happening in the in the first place. I tell you, the prior to these videos, you know, even I wasn't 100% aware of what the law was on this and how this process was done, because it's not something that we talk about in society, you know, a lot of time when we're talking about and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? And so I think that's what conservatives are trying to do here is shine a spotlight on it. And they think that if they can make more people aware of what's going on and how it's happening, then they can pull people over who were pro this and pro abortion and make them want to be anti-abortion or at least anti this process.
Francesca, thank you so much. Have a lot of fun at the Iowa State Fair. And we
thank you so much.
We thank you so much for being with us. Francesca Chambers, our guest, she's the White House correspondent for the DailyMail.com. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and Scotty Myers for on-air production. And thank you for listening. News coming up. We'll be back to talk about Richard Nixon.